Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Here with us for the next 10 or 15 minutes, the voice of the Brooklyn Nets on the YES Network, voice of the NBA on TNT, NFL on CBS, but maybe his most challenging thing is staying the most talented broadcaster in his home, and he's stuck at home with the entire family during this coronavirus epidemic. My friend, Mr. Ian Eagle. How you doing, Ian?
Hey, what's up, Mac, man? 30 years ago, 30-year anniversary of you and I meeting for the first time.
Was it really? On this particular date, how do you know that?
I believe that I met you at WFAN Radio right around this time 30 years ago, because I graduated on May the 12th. I started on May the 15th, and you were in, for some reason, my first week of work.
Okay. All right, I'll believe you. I'm just, I didn't know that.
You can't fight me on it.
No, I'll take it. Well, I could fight you. Go, no, knucklehead, it's 2 days from now. I remember the exact day. But then I'd be lying to you and the people, and I try not to do that. But damn, we've known each other a long time.
I know. But you're still a young man.
Nah, neither one of us is young anymore. I listen to your son do games, and I go, damn, Ian's old, which means that makes me even older. Damn it, we are old.
True.
It's good to hear your voice, brother. How are you getting through this?
All is good. Everything has been great on this end. Very unexpected family time, which has been nice. And just turning the battery off a little bit, but getting antsy like everybody else. I would love to have live sports back. We're seeing things starting to maybe shift, but when you get a little bit of optimism, it sometimes is backed up by a little more realism. So I'm just trying to stay patient and try to remain positive and optimistic that we're going to get back to some form of normalcy.
You and I have not had a chance to talk for a couple months, and specifically since the sports world shut down. How tough was it when you found out that the NCAA tournament was going to be canceled? I've known you forever. I go back to 30 years ago when we met at FAN, and I understand and have watched and listened and loved your entire career, and you've done a lot of different things. But between you and I think I may enjoy you most doing college basketball as part of CBS's coverage of the tournament. I know you much better than that, but I'm just giving you an honest appraisal for me as a intaking sports fan. I missed it terribly, and it's not even anywhere near as big a part of my life as it is yours. What was that like for you?
Yeah, you know, Jody Mack, I think at the time that it happened, when the announcement took place, on a personal level, I was trying to get some things sorted out. My wife was in Australia visiting my daughter, who was studying abroad. My son was in L.A. So my priorities were very much focused on getting everybody together and getting everybody in the same place. And I think I tucked away my feelings on the NCAA tournament because I was dealing with the here and now, with a couple of months having passed and obviously everybody going through the full emotional scale and spectrum. Yeah, you realize that there's a void. That's been such a big part of my broadcast life for 23 years, doing the NCAA tournament, the preparation, telling those stories, channeling all my energy in that week to 2 week period, depending upon how many rounds that I worked towards that event. And it's unfortunate that it went down that way. Those kids are never going to be able to get that moment back. And part of the reason why I enjoyed working that particular event so much is that the stories change every year. It's a new set of players, and it's a new set of narratives and storylines, and they live forever. You remember March Madness heroes forever and ever, and It's not always the guys that go on to have incredible success in the NBA. Sometimes the best stories are the ones that you know this is the highest level they're ever going to play at. So, yeah, it's really unfortunate more than anything else, but you understand in the big picture that this is where we are, and the hope is we can get back to where we were.
Yeah, one of the things you just said rang so true for me, that March Madness memories last forever. Would people even know, if they weren't of our age, where Valparaiso is? But because of March Madness memories, we all know where Valparaiso is. If not, we might think it's a dog food or something along those lines.
And how do we say it? Is it Valparaiso or is it Valparaiso? Is it Gonzaga? Is it Gonzaga? These are burning questions during the month of March. You're right. Bryce Drew, Homer Drew, that moment. That was the first year I did the tournament. Ted Robinson and Rolando Blackman were on the call, but that was 1998, my first year doing a tournament for CBS, and that is by far the distinct memory that will stick with me from that year's tournament. My games, I was out in Sacramento that year, and we didn't have anything of real note. Maryland was there. Arizona was the defending champions. They were there, but it was a different Arizona squad, not quite the same group. Illinois was out there. Illinois State was out there. Utah State, Nichols State. So there you go. 1998, I still remember all the teams that were in it because it's such an indelible part of my career.
It stays in one's memory. Iron Eagle, CBS's broadcaster for the Big Dance, but also NFL and TNT's NBA coverage and the voice of the Nets in New York. Let me jump into the NBA with you. I figured I'd put you up at this hour tonight because an hour from now, actually more like 50 minutes, the final two episodes of The Last Dance, the ongoing 10-episode quasi-documentary, and that's all it is, not a true documentary, but a quasi-documentary on the Bulls and basically Michael Jordan. How much have you enjoyed it?
I've enjoyed it a lot. I think, like everybody else, to take a trip in the time machine, to see the video, to see the behind-the-scenes footage, to jar memories from that time. I started in the NBA in 1994. So that year that I began, I just assumed, well, I'm never going to do any Michael Jordan games. He was playing baseball. He was retired. He ended up coming back that season, lost to the Magic in the playoffs, and then the next year, of course, set off the next three-peat. I don't want to ruin anything for anyone that's watching tonight. Doesn't know the history. But we know the kind of run that he went on, and then had another chapter with the Washington Wizards, and that had some intrigue to it as well. So I ended up getting a fair share of Jordan games through the years, and there was always this general intensity when you walked in the arena and you knew he was playing, because it was going to be packed. There was going to be a lot of anticipation. Certainly in his heyday, you thought maybe you'd see something that you've never seen before. And there was just a vibe and electricity that he brought to things. And I was fortunate that I got to meet him a few times. Michael Koren, my Nets radio analyst, my first year I did radio, the next year I moved to TV. Mike was a star at North Carolina, and he was Michael Jordan's host for his recruiting visit, his official recruiting visit.
Never knew that.
So he and Michael were very close. They had that Tar Heel connection, and he would bring me all those rooms you saw in the back at United Center. Michael Koren would bring me back there. Say, yeah, come on, we'll go see Michael. And Michael just liked to bust chops. And I remember one of the nights that we walked in there, you know, he introduced me to him. He's like, wait, so you're the guy who carries this guy? You know, just wanted to be one of the guys in many ways, but let you know who was boss. And he could not have been any nicer and more magnanimous in those moments. And I think there was a real bond there based on their love of Dean Smith and their love of North Carolina.
and doing talk shows in New York for all those years, certainly the Bulls were a very hated squad in the city of New York.
Sure.
Mostly because of what they did to the Knicks in the playoffs. They did get them the one time that Michael wasn't available, but how many times the Bulls ousted the Knicks in the playoffs? I had almost forgotten the Nets paid the price, too. They got picked off by the Bulls plenty as well, usually a round or two earlier. But the Nets, whether they be in Jersey, whichever arena they were playing in, they felt the wrath of Michael Jordan almost as much as the Knicks.
Yeah, first playoff game that I ever did that was not the international broadcast, because I had done the NBA Finals, in fact. That was another personal connection for me. I did two of the finals that he played in on the world feed. So the Bulls-Seattle Supersonic Series, and then the one you're going to see later on tonight, the Bulls and the Utah Jazz, the Brian Russell game. I was doing that game for the international broadcast. But the 1998 playoffs, Nets and Bulls, that was my first taste of local playoff action. And the Nets played them tough. They should have won game one. They let that one slip away. They hung around in game two. And then you could just feel it second half of game three that they just didn't have anything left in the tank, and the Bulls just had this presence about them with Jordan. And that night at the Meadowlands was still packed because Jordan was in there. It was MJ, and the Nets could not pack the place all that often. They packed it every time when it was Michael Jordan.
And I just reviewed that series in the last episode, and yes, you're right. The first game was competitive, and then Michael decided he's Michael, and that was pretty much it for the Nets. All right, let's jettison ahead to 2020. You are the voice of the Nets on the YES Network. How often do you speak to someone from the organization just to shoot the breeze, see where the team is at, see where the league is at? Is it, don't call us, we'll call you, because we don't really have answers, so we're all in a hold mode? How does the voice of a team get information about where his team sits in a league that is suspended?
Well, we have a group chat, a text chain with all of us that work on the Nets telecast, so we're in constant communication almost on a daily basis with that. But that's really more because of friendship and less the professional side. I would say it's probably more of the former. We'll let you know when there's some news. And until that point, it's all speculation and it's all conjecture. I think the NBA has looked at every possible option. Everything that you've heard, all the rumors have been true. They've all been on the table. The league wants to continue. They want to resume. There's a financial part of this, obviously, that could set back the league if they don't get back to playing games. But I think also they want to crown a champion. And deep down, they also know that LeBron James has a finite number of years to actually go and win a championship for his place in history, for the 10-part series that ESPN is going to do 20 years from now. And they need one of the chapters, and 2020 is part of it. So there is motivation, but they're not going to do anything rash, and they're not going to do anything to jeopardize their players or their staff members. I do think if the NBA does resume, there's a very good chance that broadcasters would not be part of the bubble setup.
Right.
They would be in a location somewhere else, a remote location, a studio location, calling it off a monitor. And it's something I've done. I've done it in my career. I've done it for NBA Finals. The ones that I mentioned to you, I was on site, but I did the Miami-San Antonio series, the big Ray Allen shot, and I did that from a studio in Secaucus off a big screen. Me and Jim Spetarkle called the games. I've called World Basketball Championships off a screen in a studio. I've called tennis matches. I've called golf off the screen. It's doable. It's feasible. Is it the best setup? Of course not. But if it means that we have games, I'd be more than happy to call it from a studio with a headset on and try to do my best to make it feel like you're there at the game.
Ian Eagle, second best broadcaster in his family these days, here with us on CBS Sports Radio. I know you're baseball, you mentioned the 97 things you have broadcast. Baseball didn't come up. I've done talk shows with you. I've listened to you do talk show. I know how big a baseball fan you are. I know you understand the game. I know you stay on top of it. They just came out with a proposal between the owners and the players, pages and pages and pages, and some pretty stringent guidelines that they're going to be using to keep the players safe to be able to start the baseball season. The NBA can't do anything like that. It's a physical game. It's a contact sport. If baseball is going to have trouble restarting because they're taking too much chance, how can anyone actually come up with a potential scenario other than, well, pie in the sky and we're wishful thinking here, that you can get NBA underway within the next 2 or 3 months? If baseball's got the right feel on it for what's necessary, then I think it's impossible for basketball, hockey, and the NFL to be able to come back within the next 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, I just know on a personal level, on the broadcast side, already we're starting to hear some things behind the scenes of how strict and stringent it's going to be just to go do your job as a broadcaster. I can only imagine what that list would look like for a professional sports league. We're getting a taste of it from MLB, and most people were taken aback. What do you mean no spitting? Well, that's a big part of it. You can't just stick your toe in the pool here. You have to be completely committed to trying to maintain the safest and most healthy environment. From an NBA point of view, there's a reason why they have not announced a return date, because all of the issues that you just brought up are issues that they're dealing with on a daily basis. And here's a fact. They can't restart this and have one player test positive and shut it down. It can't be a house of cards. It can't be that tenuous, or it's a PR nightmare. The optics of it are terrible, and it does no good for the NBA. So they're trying to look at every possible angle to bring this thing back under the full idea that they can't shut it down.
All right, last one on the NBA, and I want to get one NFL question in with you. It's a hypothetical question. As a former talk show host, I know you understand them quite well. Whether they do or don't get the season restarted, is it a foregone conclusion that the next NBA season isn't going to start till December?
I've heard dueling opinions on this. There are some within the NBA that felt, even without this pandemic, that their best chance to raise the television ratings and to avoid the crux of the NFL season was to start later, whether it's early December or on Christmas, make that their opening day in the NBA. There was a growing faction within the league that believed that was the best move to make. Obviously, now it's gained even more steam based on the current schedule and based on the fact they might not have a choice. They may have to wait this thing out. Certainly, if this season is canceled, then they're going to have to go back to the drawing board and figure out a way to pick up the action at a time where they can get exposure and make sure everybody is safe and maybe get to a point where they can let some fans into the arena. And that, to me, feels more like a December start than it does a late October start. My sense of it is, no matter what happens, we're not going to see 2021 until later in the calendar year compared to what we've been accustomed to.
Agreed, 100%. All right, last thing, and I know how big a football guy you are. We look forward to hearing you broadcast from a studio somewhere when the NFL plays games this year, and that might not be the date that they're planning on starting either.
Yep.
But I know how much you stay on top of the game. I'm sure you saw the story that the NFL is going to vote on potentially adding more teeth to the Rooney Rule, incentivizing it, and potentially giving teams advantages in draft status if they hire minority coaches and general managers and the like. Necessary evil, overreaction, blown way out of proportion. What's your take on this vote that the NFL, the vote's going to happen. I don't know if it's going to pass or not, but it is right. Going to happen. They wouldn't let it leak out if they didn't really intend on having this vote. What's your take on it all?
You know, my take on it is, behind the scenes when they were talking this through, I'm sure there were some very smart people that went back and forth and thought to themselves, this is a brilliant idea. This is a way to get teams to maybe take a broader view of who their future head coaches could be and who their future decision makers, GMs, player personnel could be. But when you bring this to the public in this way, and I know, as you said, it was leaked, but obviously it was leaked for a reason, to get the word out or maybe just to gauge public opinion, you have to be aware of the fact that there are going to be a lot of people that will say that this is manipulated and contrived, and you have to allow things to happen in a way that is authentic, and there has to be a better way to develop individuals in these jobs. And yes, the NFL has taken a step back. We appeared to be going in the right direction with the NFL along those lines, but the last couple of years, it has gone in the wrong direction. I don't see how most people will find this to be the best plan. I just don't see how putting an incentive in place of that nature is going to change the game. You look for the best people in those jobs. And the key is now identifying those people as they come through the ranks and making sure that owners and general managers and decision makers in the league are on top of it. I understand all of what they're trying to do, and I think they're trying to do a good thing here. I just don't know if they've done it in the right manner.
He tells me it was 30 years ago this week. I'm not sure if that's the case, but he's probably right because he's smarter than I am. But it's starting to come back to me that when I first met Ian Eagle, it did dawn on me he's going to be one of the best broadcasters of my time. I think I verbalized that. Maybe I just thought it. I'm not sure which, but I do remember working with this guy for a very long period of time, and he is as good as it gets. Ian Eagle, always a pleasure. Best to the entire fam. Tell your son we said hello, and tell him I'm on the bandwagon as him being the best Eagle broadcaster in the house.
And I'm cool with that, and I'm also cool that one of your middle names is Aloysius. I'm cool with that.
Birdman, thanks, buddy. I'll talk to you.
All right, bud.
Ian Eagle here with us on CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.